Everybody, this is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com, and it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, I'm excited to catch up with a return guest. Somebody that was on the podcast 7 years ago, if you can believe that. So I'm really excited to welcome back and say hey to Rachel. Hey, Rachel, how are you today?
Hey, Pam, I'm doing so good. I was telling you before the show that I just went to a soccer game and I'm frozen. So I'm bundled up in my blankets right now, so I'm doing better. I'm good.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. So I am really excited to kind of catch up with you and see what you've been up to in the past years since you were first on the podcast, if you can believe it was back in 2011. So before we get started, could you introduce yourself to our listeners, who you are and where you're from and what you do to keep busy?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Rachel. I am from a small town north of Nashville, and I received, so the first time that I spoke with Pam, I was pursuing my bachelor's in creative writing at Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And then after that, I went and got my master's in the fine arts in creative writing and creative nonfiction writing at the Arkansas Writers Program. And so now I'm back in the Nashville area. I'm a full-time book editor, and I also I'm freelance write on the side. I write primarily about stuttering. And right now my main topic, which I am excited to hopefully try to write a book about eventually, is the intersection between stuttering and gender and kind of how being a woman and being a person who stutters, how those two parts of my identity really intersect and play with one another. So yeah, so that's me in a nutshell. Sorry.
Yeah. And actually, that long-term goal of writing a book about the intersection of women and stuttering is absolutely perfect for this podcast. So I'm really excited to talk about that today, because I think it's going to really resonate with many of our listeners who are women, but we also have some guys that listen in, and it's a great topic. But first, I want to ask you, you said you're employed full time as a book editor. So what exactly do you do as a book editor?
Yeah, so I just started a new job in January. So once I graduated with my master's, I came back home to the Nashville area. And so now my official title is production editor. So, basically I handle about 150 titles a year. And so I schedule, edits and proofreads. So I also perform them myself, you know, so I'm very entrenched, you know, in things like I'm Chicago, I'm versus, I'm AP style, you know, I'm stuff like that. So I also am the main quality control person, at my publisher. And so I'm the last pair of eyes who I'm proofreads, and checks for errors and that kind of stuff. Mm. Yeah. So basically I just read and write all day and, and I love it. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's like totally in your wheelhouse, right?
Yes, completely.
Do you work in an office or do you work from home?
I work in an office, and let me tell you, my new schedule, you know, I've been in college for like 7 years, I guess, you know, now. And so I'm having to wake up now at like 5 a.m. and I have like an hour commute. And then I work from like 7 to 4:30. And then I have I'm hour commute. So it's like a long day for me. I'm trying to get used to the new schedule. Because for almost a decade, you know, like I just had, you know, a lot more flexibility. So it's been a little bit of a struggle in that realm of like, oh, I have to go to bed so early and wake up so early, you know, like it's, yeah, it's a struggle.
But. Yeah. Yeah. But I think there's a term for that. I think it's called adulting.
I assumed that was coming. Yeah. It's very true. I'm adulting. Well, and so right now too, like I'm trying to, apartment hunt, you know, so I'll be closer come to work soon, I hope. But yeah, so that's me. Yeah. So I work, I'm full time in an office and I, you know, and so I have, my own little, gorgeous Mac with like, two like screens and monitors. I'm obsessed with my computer. I love a good Mac. So,
oh. Awesome. Awesome. And do you work with a lot of people?
We're actually kind of a small team compared to most other book publishers. We have like maybe 10, 10 other people on our staff, but actually, you know, it's been really interesting because I was pretty, I'm nervous, you know, like, whenever you meet a brand new group of people, you know, I'm going to have to kind of come out as a person who stutters, you know.
Right.
There's always that kind of hesitation and stuff. But so all of my freelance writing, you know, with the Washington Post and Salon and the Guardian, having all of those things, all of those articles about stuttering, that I've written, actually helped me get the job. And yeah, you know, and so it was kind of a great thing to, you know, to, I'm going to a new work environment where everyone's already kind of read like my thoughts on my speech. And so there wasn't a lot of like, awkwardness or anything. So that was kind of a great byproduct, you know, of my freelance work for sure.
Yeah. So you've been able to be completely open about your stuttering at the new job?
I actually just like a few days ago, I had a talk with a coworker, because she would ask, she leaned over to me and she was like, "Can I ask you a question about stuttering?" And I was like, "Please, I want to talk about this like all day long. Like, sure." And so yeah, like. Whenever I had like I had a piece come out with Yahoo, I think like last month or something, and my boss shared it with the whole team.
Oh.
Just like really like sweet and supportive people there. So yeah, I'm very blessed right now, I think, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. And what was the question that the co-worker wanted to ask you? Do you remember?
She asked me if my stutter was situational because she had noticed that I stutter a lot more like when we all get together for like a group meeting or something like that, but when it's just like me and her or me and her in like a small group that I'm at the amount of disfluencies go down, and so I was like, of course, it is highly situational. I'm glad you asked, so I
Yeah,
was like, yes, for sure.
and that's wonderful that you were able to educate her a little bit about that, and also that she felt comfortable enough to ask that. So, yeah, that's great that you're in an environment where you can be open and share and talk about it. Yeah, so I think that's cool that your boss sent your most recent article out to everybody. So let's talk about some of your writing. You've been really busy and getting published all over. How do you I don't know if this would be the right word, but how do you pitch your stuff to various publishers?
So that is the correct word. Good job. So mostly my articles, I'll start from an idea first. So I'll have some kind of interaction in like my real life, or like I'll have some sort of epiphany or something happen, and so I'll just kind of draft out like a loose outline or something, and then I'll think, which kind of publication first, would be a good fit, and then after that, which kind of places, do I as a writer have a goal to try to have a byline in eventually, and so from that I just kind of choose, and so there is like some research involved in that, so luckily the last year I joined a Women's Writer Group for writers who write and pitch. I'm creative nonfiction, you know. I joined that group, and they were so encouraging in sharing their resources and that kind of stuff. I got some contacts there, but basically though, to pitch an article, I just try to find the editor of the section of the publication, you know. So hit the Washington Post, for instance. You know, I knew I wrote my first article there was about dating and stuttering, and so I found the editor who ran the Soloist column, and Soloist is like a column about dating and kind of like unique perspectives on dating. And so I knew, you know, that being a 20-something woman who, you know, who has a stutter and who is trying to date, you know, said that I would probably have a unique perspective to share on that. And so I pitched her an idea, and she said, you know, I like this idea. Can you write it on spec? And so, and that was like a Thursday. And so I sent her my draft on like Sunday, and then the piece ran on like Tuesday or something of that week. So that was like a whirlwind. I was just like, I'm in the Washington Post all of a sudden. Like, how did this even happen? You know? But yeah.
That was, I remember reading that, and actually I have posted quite a few of your pieces on my Facebook page, Women Who Stutter Our Stories, and because like they're all completely relevant to my theme, you know, talking about women. And I also remember you wrote a piece about, I don't remember the exact title, but you wrote a piece about lipstick and stuttering. What was that one about?
Yes, that one, I published that one with Self Magazine. I'm trying to remember what they titled it. I can Google it, but it was basically about, so last summer I went through a phase where I realized that when I wear really bright lipstick, and that it makes the physical aspects of my stutter more obvious, I guess, you know. And so I got really self-conscious for a while, you know, I love to wear, you know, reds and pinks and purples and all the, you know, all the colors of the rainbow. For like a few months, I kind of stopped. I'm allowing myself that, you know, that form of self-expression, because I thought that, you know, because I thought that it would be more important to try to hide my stutter somehow. And so eventually, though, thankfully, I came to my senses, and I was like, this makes no sense, you know? And I learned that, I'm not to embrace my stutter, you know, I can't just embrace it. I'm like, I'm philosophical kind of way, you know, I have to be willing to embrace, even the physical aspects of it too, you know? And so I have to just kind of, you know, come to learn that that is like a part of my life. I'm at a part of my identity. And so I think that, you know, that epiphany though really helped me pushed me into my next phase, you know, of just self-awareness about my stutter, and just trying to embrace myself, as a woman who stutters as well. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, I really enjoyed that piece because I had never ever thought that something like a lipstick choice would actually make your physical stuttering or your, you know, secondary behaviors, if you will, more pronounced. And it was really provocative to consider that. So I just really like the way that you take life experiences and, you know, weave that into a story that, you know, women can so absolutely relate to.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you really have such a talent and a way with words, and you're very expressive, and I can't wait to read the book that's gonna eventually come of all this.
Eventually, yes, eventually it will come. Yes. Yeah.
So let's talk about the most recent piece that you had. What do you call a woman with a speech disability and invisible? So what drew you to write about this?
Yeah. And that title, first of all, was not my choice. I was like, what a dramatic title that they chose for that. I didn't write that. So I was just really intrigued because, you know, I had, you know, I'm in our current climate, you know, I'm constantly kind of contemplating, you know, how my life, as a woman, you know, is, you know, I'm shaped by our culture. And so then I started to kind of contemplate, you know, but wait, you know, I'm adding a speech disability. I'm on top of that adds, you know, adds how many layers of complexity to this, you know?
Yeah.
And so I started to kind of just, you know, just kind of reflect on, you know, on how my life has been kind of shaped by these interactions where I know that my speech and my gender are being judged, I guess. And so I know that, you know, and plus I just knew, you know, I think that right now it's really hard to, you know, to have your voice heard as a person who stutters, and then when you add, you know, in your identity as a woman too, just how kind of complex that, you know, again, that can get. And so I wanted to just kind of explore those topics and those themes, and just kind of see, you know, in what way that I have struggled against that kind of thing, and how I've ultimately come out the other side. I mean, I'm stronger, you know, now, but how as a young woman or as a teenager, I really had problems knowing that my voice, that my perspective had value to it, you know? And so yes, yeah, so that's where that you know, so that's where the piece in Humday magazine kind of came from, for sure.
So you didn't choose the title, but do you really think that women who stutter are sort of invisible?
Yeah, I have strong feelings about this, I guess, or just kind of ambivalent feelings about this. So I do think that society would prefer us to be silent, to be invisible, you know, not to try to add our, like, our thoughts and our complexity to the situation. Because if we do, then, you know, then those people have to kind of re-examined by their own attitudes and behaviors and that kind of stuff. So in a way, I do think, you know, that we can start off as invisible, but I do think that most of the women who I know who stutter are just like are warriors, you know, just really strong, and, you know, and have fought to make their voice heard, you know. And so while I do think that, you know, that we can start off kind of misunderstood, and overlooked, for sure, I think that we have learned how to become a force to be reckoned with, you know. I think that, you know, that for me, you know, it's through my writing is how I try to gain visibility, you know, and how I try to share self-awareness, you know. But for you, it's, you know, it's, with you, it's been through your, public speaking and through your, leadership works, you know? And so I think that we all kind of have our talents and our strengths that show, you know, that while society has tried to silence us, has tried to make us invisible. We refuse to be silent on that.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, this topic is absolutely fascinating, and you're right. I think women who stutter are like, this is our time. And, you know, for years and years, most of the references to stuttering, you know, publicly and in the media have always revolved around men. And it's just, you know, high time that, you know, society recognize that, you know, women who stutter have a voice too. And yeah, granted, we're a minority within the minority, but, you know, there's obvious differences between women and men who stutter. And I think we have more to say.
Yeah.
And we're saying it. Yeah.
I totally agree. You know, I think I'm part of my original kind of desire for trying to write about my speech as a woman is that growing up, you know, I just knew that, I just knew that people who stutter were always men to me, you know, so, you know, and so, like, and so even though I would read some books and stuff, you know, I'm gonna try to become more, I'm informed and to kind of share in that, you know, that I'm shared experience. I still knew that my experience as a woman who stuttered was different from the men who I knew who stuttered as well, you know. And so I would really love to write the book that my, you know, that my teenage self could have used, you know, because I was lost on topics like dating and, you know, and beauty and, you know, and how that kind of stuff can really kind of impact a stutter. And and, you know, and so like the question of motherhood and and how to be a woman in the workplace who also stutters, you know, so all of these kind of complex layers. So yeah, sorry, I'm just ranting at this point.
No, it's absolutely fine. I mean, it's they're just, you know, important topics that really don't get much reflection or much, you know, coverage. And, you know, I do think it's important, particularly for younger women who stutter, to, you know, have the courage to bring voice to these topics, you know, because like you mentioned, so eloquently, as a teen and a young woman, there's not a lot of role models, for young women who stutter. And it's important that, you know, we get those people out there because, you know, like I just said, you know, we have a voice and we need to be heard. And there's a whole generation of young women who stutter behind us that, you know, could benefit from our courage to speak up and speak out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, You mentioned knowing people who stutter. Are you involved at all in the like local stuttering community?
So because I just moved back to the Nashville area, I have not joined the chapter yet, but actually tonight I'm going to see Drew Lynch, I'm stuttering comedian. He has a show at a local comedy club. I'm here in Nashville, and so I'm excited to meet a lot of people from the chapter for the first time. So yeah, so I'm trying to get more face-to-face involvement, but I do have a lot of friends. I went to the National Stuttering Association conference for the first time. In Atlanta, so that was 2016, I guess, right? And so I met everybody. Not everybody, because man, it was like 1,000 people were there. Would be pretty hard, but I have made made some close friends. Who also stutter. I'm in such a relief to kind of have that, that outlet to be able to be able to go to a person and say, man, I just had a, look like a bad day, and they're like, I get it, and you look like, and you're like, yes, look like you actually do get it, So it is a very important, I think, to try to find your, your people, and try to and to try to get involved on, on the national and the local level as well, so.
I like to call the people my tribe. Like when I found my tribe, gosh, like 12 years ago, that's when I first found the stuttering community. I had the same feeling and reaction that you just described, relief. That there were other people that, completely got me. So, that is so critical, for our validation of self to have other people that can help us validate. But I want to just go back real quick to you mentioned that you're going to go see Drew Lynch tonight. I remember when I first saw him live. I've seen him twice now in my area. I went with my mom and a sister, and I remember they had invited me, which, first of all, totally shocked me because we'd never really talked about stuttering. And then to have my sister invite me to go attend a stuttering show with her, I was like, oh my God, wow, this is like a breakthrough. But I remember when we were sitting in the venue waiting for the show to start, and Drew came on stage and, told his first stuttering related joke. I remember my sister and my mom both glanced over at me, checking my reaction to make sure that it was okay to laugh. So I will be really curious what you think, because it's, it's about comedy and laughing at stuttering, and it's a unique perspective to have. Are you worried about that at all? Like how you might react or what it might be like?
I've thought about this. So that's first of all why I chose to, with other people who stutter, that was a big kind of goal of mine, because even though my friends and family are so supportive and are so great, I knew that I would prefer to have that sort of solidarity, and to kind of have that like that joint experience with other people who stutter. And so, so I was really intentional in that, because I remember, whenever I first watched like the King's Speech, and I watched it with my parents, and I'm just like crying, and they're like, and they're like, I'm turning their head, I'm to see if I'm okay, and so I just knew that I knew that I wanted to kind of have more of a united kind of experience, I guess. I love to talk about I'm stuttering, to people who are fluent, or who don't, really understand my circumstance. But I think that there is something really uniquely special about having that kind of community. I guess, so to answer your question more fully, I am a little like, I'll be curious to see how other people respond to Drew's comedy, because I know that, I know that we probably, like that our group will probably be one of the only groups of people who stutter, but I don't know, I mean, I do know that the show tonight is, sold out, so that's
Oh,
exciting. Yeah, so I'm packed house. So I'll be curious to, to kind of see what kind of reactions that he gets, and who knows, maybe I'll even write about it eventually, because that's kind of my thing, is to draw from my real life experiences. We'll see what happens tonight. I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited for you to have that opportunity for the first time. And I'll definitely look forward to your reactions to it. I remember in my blog, I wrote about how I felt after, seeing him for the first time. And then I believe I even wrote about it the second time that I saw him. And the second time that I went, I did go with a friend that stutters, and that was a little more comfortable than it was when I was with my mom and my sister. But I'm sure you're gonna love it. And I have absolutely loved catching up with you today. This has been just a wonderful conversation, which I feel like we really only scratched the
I know.
surface. But thank you so much for joining me again, and for sharing what you've been up to, and your great reflections on being a woman who stutters. It's, you know, you've got a lot to say, and we can't wait to hear it.
And thank you, Pam. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on too, you know. I love your podcast, and I love your, you know, your own personal advocacy is such an inspiration to me. So I'm always, I'm so always love to get to catch up with you. So thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you're so welcome. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.